Welcome to ClickFunnels Radio, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here's your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to ClickFunnels Radio. This is going to be one of those fun podcasts. I have the opportunity to interview a dear friend of mine who I've known for years, really followed when I first got started in the whole internet marketing space, and that's Mr. Rich Sheffrin. Rich, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Dave.
I'm so excited. So for those of you guys who don't know Rich, he's the founder and president of Strategic Profits. He's really the guru to all gurus. I got introduced to him way back when I first got started in the internet marketing space with his whole internet business manifesto, which was like just this massive brainchild of content and exactly how to build a business, how to actually create a business online. And it was so cutting edge. And I think that's the thing I love, Rich, about all the stuff that you do, is it truly is cutting edge and it's always in front of whatever anyone else is doing. So those of you guys who are listening, I'd highly recommend you go get a piece of paper and a pen, pull your car over to the side, get off the treadmill, whatever it might be, take some notes. You're gonna absolutely love everything Rich has to say. So with that, Rich, let's kind of just dive right into this. First of all, before I say that, I want to make sure I give you anything else you want. You know what? Why don't you tell the story about Russell Brunson? And you're basically saving his business.
I'll tell two stories about Russell, right? One where I helped save him, and another one where he opened my eyes to something. So the first time that Russell and I got really close was after there was like this period of time where a lot of people lost their merchant accounts online, had to do with coaching platforms and dollar trial offers and things like that. And Russell was one of many people that lost their merchant account that put him in a very precarious situation where he owed the government like over $1 million in back payroll taxes and didn't have the money to pay it. And unfortunately, that's one of those taxes you end up going to jail for if you can't pay it. So Russell was obviously in a panic. And this was after we had already invented and kind of had refined automated webinars. So I was like, I got your answer, Russell. Just fly down to Florida. I'll give you my software. I'll give you the report I wrote for my clients. And it's yours. Good to go. And that's what he did. He flew around the country, spoke to a few people, came to my office. I gave him the software, gave him the report. And I don't remember if it was 30 days or 60 days or 90 days later, he had made the million plus back in the automated webinar that he was running and was crushing it, which, you know, ultimately led to ClickFunnels. But obviously, I had nothing to do with that. The other thing, though, that is really interesting, and it relates to webinars about Russell, which I think is pretty funny, is that one of his webinars was really like kicking, you know what? It was just like, it was driving revenue at a very high rate. And he was really proud of it. And so he sent it to me and he's like, he wanted me to see it. And so I watched it and I'm watching it and I'm like, this is horrible. This webinar is absolutely horrible. I just can't even believe that this is converting so well. And then he got to the offer. And the offer was so spectacular. It was for High Ticket Selling Secrets, I believe was the product. And like the offer made it feel like all you had to do was buy the thing and tomorrow you'd be selling high ticket products. And not because of any claim that Russell made, but just by what he included in the offer. And it watching that, like that was like a pivot point in my own marketing career, which wasn't as long ago as it probably should have been, where I realized that I had learned how to market and market well because I had never learned how to put great offers together. And what I was witnessing was how much easier of a job it was to have a successful webinar when you had a stellar over-the-top offer, something that I didn't have, which is why I always had to market so much harder until I realized how much easier it could be if I just made the offer better, which was one of Russell's many geniuses, is his ability, one, to simplify, two, to craft extremely compelling offers. And the offer at the end of the day is I pay you this and I get this, and then I have to do what to get what I ultimately want. And you know, I hadn't thought too much about those second parts, what they had to do to get what they ultimately wanted. But watching Russell, who is a master in action doing that, was eye-opening. And then all of a sudden, I liked the webinar a lot more. But when I was first watching it, I had like, how is this doing so well? So props to Russell. Yeah, we go way back.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, as we take a look at where we are right now, I know one of the main things you've had the opportunity of doing is kind of retired and then had the opportunity kind of really coming back. You spent a lot of time working with Agora. You've had the opportunity of really seeing big business and some of the things that they're doing to really kind of encroach on some of the stuff that internet businesses are trying to do. And I'm really kind of curious to see what are you seeing out there? You and I were talking earlier just about even some of the stuff with Amazon. I think you said 95 million people are on Prime, 65% of the U.S. And
right.
I just want to kind of dive in as far as what do you have this opportunity basically of you have like this crystal ball always in your hands of being able to see the future. So I want you to kind of pull back the curtain and tell everyone on our call here, what is it that you're seeing? What are the things people need to be aware of?
Yeah, so what I would say is that, yeah, I've been fortunate. And I guess I've been fortunate from a standpoint of having coached so many people that has kind of kept me in the loop, so to speak, of everything that kind of happens online. You know, I just have a big customer base and a bunch of private clients who are at the cutting edge. So they keep me kind of informed. One of them being Agora, right? So I've worked with Agora since about 2004 or five. And, you know, when they were just a $100 million or $200 million a year business and now $1.7 billion, have the only $1 billion testimonial from that I think exists, but have it from Agora, helping them grow by $1 billion. And they called me because they were having a lot of problems with the platforms and they needed help. And so I came in to help and I was fascinated by everything that Agora was now doing and the evolution of AI and data. And so I wanted to spend more time doing that. And they had tried to buy my business years ago. So I was like, well, if you'll buy my business or half of it, we'll bring it into Agora. And then I can spend all my time looking at these problems and help you solve them. And when I solve them for you, we can also help small entrepreneurs throughout the world. And so they dug that. And so that was the original plan. And as I looked at AI and data, what I noticed was that for a company like Agora, we have enough data. We certainly can do quite a bit with the amount of data that we have. I mean, you know, selling $1 billion+ worth of info products online and the amount of copy we put out and the tracking that we do, certainly have a lot of data. However, like, that while that's what's given these platforms like Google and Facebook and Yahoo, Google, Facebook, and Amazon, their power, it's not necessarily what smaller businesses need to win, nor is it even what Agora needs to win. Now, when Agora has a problem with the platform, we're fortunate in the sense that we can get someone on the phone. A lot of small businesses can't. They just lose an account and there's never an explanation why. And it's just because you're not important enough to them, which sort of sucks. And I've been on the receiving end of lots of clients of mine having those problems. Fortunately, I never have. And that's really just a small taste of what is happening in the online environment in general. That, you know, I think in, I forget the numbers, but I think that like from 2006 to 2018, like we went from like $30 billion a year being spent online to like 2 point some odd trillion dollars. It was like a 75X. And, you know, when you look at like from 2006 to today, 75X, you know, very few companies online are 75 times the size of what they were in 2006. But there are some companies that are tens of thousands of times bigger, and those would be the Agora, not the Agoras of the world, that would be the Googles and the Amazon and Facebook and YouTube and all those. And so these companies are growing at a crazy rate, and they've really kind of stacked the deck in their favor there. And that's why big tech has become a word, right? Anytime big is in front of an industry, it's bad news for that industry. There's big pharma, there's big tobacco, there's big oil. There's, you know, we don't say big when we're saying something nice. And there's never been a time where there have been less people in control of so much. And the, like, they changed the monopoly laws back in the 70s, where like you were only considered a monopoly if the pricing was unfair to the consumer. And, you know, there have been some great breakups. Like, I'm 48, so I still remember when Ma Bell had, the monopoly on phones. You had to rent your phone from the phone company. You weren't allowed to buy a phone. Nobody sold phones. And I bet you that had the government not broken up Ma Bell, we might not even have cell phones today, because there was no innovation with phones, right? And there probably wouldn't be a Google if the government hadn't gone after Microsoft. We would have been binging everything. And so, but then after Microsoft, the laws changed to, you had to be affecting the consumer and the price that they were paying for the business to be considered a monopoly. The challenge is that what if these companies put, by giving everything away free, like put all these other companies out of business, so then it's too late. And that's kind of, Amazon, if you look at Amazon, they compete with people on their platform. They learn from their platform what Amazon Basics they should be creating. And they do it right with the data that these companies are, are throwing off by selling on there. And you really don't have a choice. If you're not at Amazon, you're kind of missing a very important part. But at the same time, they're using their data to compete with you, which is problematic. So, yeah, it's left an environment that's just really unhealthy. And so what I realized was that, as a strategist, which is really what my main, I'd say, strength is, my wheelhouse, I can't get into the specifics of any category of online marketing to the point we need it if we're going to try and figure out strategies that help us thrive in an age that is very platform driven. And so what I did is I called out to the world's top experts in every different area that put me in touch with, Russell for obviously anything funnel related, and to like Neil Patel for organic search, or James Von Elswick for native advertising, or Nick Shackelford for e-commerce, or you name it. I've called them and they're all coming to Delray for a 24-hour live stream, and that makes up the Committee to Save Internet Business. And what we'll be doing for those 24 hours, besides entertaining, because we're going to try and do this in a fun, lively way, is we're going to be sharing strategies that we know work today, our winners, that will work for everyone listening and everyone who attends this live stream to use in their business in 2020 to get like the decade off on the right foot, and to recognize that there are certain actions that you should take that really set you up to not be overly dependent on any platform, and to have the most sustainable, long-term, like protected business, but also one that can grow. And, it becomes a process really where you have to, it's not about selling less on the platforms that you use. It's about taking that and building on top of it a more sustainable, more safe growth strategy.
I love that.
I figured you'd have questions. So,
yeah. Well, we spent a lot of time going through and seeing a lot of the Google slaps, and we joke in our community quite a bit about Xanos and Zuckerberg's basically. So many of these small businesses are based on Facebook. All of a sudden, Facebook decides to change things, and your entire business dies. And so I was so excited to see this idea as far as, a committee behind trying to find ways of saving internet businesses for 2020, which ties in perfectly with our launch of Russell's book, Traffic Secrets, and some of those things. But I wanted to kind of find out from your perspective, what are some of the things you're seeing right now that a small business owner needs to be aware of? What are the specifics they should be doing or changing in their business? Obviously, you're going to go through a ton of them on the live cast. Again, it's
right. Well, I would, yeah, definitely. I would say that, what I would say is that for sure, right, that people need to start collecting their own data. So, whether their data lives in Google Analytics or whether, it's their Facebook ad manager, they should be downloading that data as frequently as possible, or at least on some scheduled basis. Because if you ever lose your account, you lose access to all that data, and that would be a shame. Because you might benefit from that data later on with a lot of the AI tools out there. In addition to that, and these are some light things, but I think these are things that can be done. And I can drop at least one heavy one. It's also about recognizing that you don't want to be overly platform dependent. And I think that's what's happened, especially with Facebook. So pre-Facebook, there were most people in the market of like internet marketing or business growth had a very hard time finding customers because like someone like me, for example, if I bid on like a keyword, make money online, the person was way too green. They believed in too many like fantasies that I didn't want to have to take the time to dispel. Right. So, and if someone's typing in ClickFunnels, they were looking for ClickFunnels. That's not the time that they want to be interrupted for a message from me. So when AdWords was the only game in town, it was much more difficult. Then Facebook came into play and with its demographic and psychographic profiling was able to really help a lot of businesses grow. And, you know, unfortunately, the cost per acquisition goes up every year, even in years of recession. Their prices continue to grow, and between Google and Facebook, they control like 90% of online advertising, something close to that. And especially if you include Amazon with it, and it's if you include Amazon, it's like digital advertising is actually shrinking, except for those three companies. It's not as bad as that, but it's almost as bad as that. And there are certain things that are as bad as that. Like the field of digital marketing as a career actually is shrinking unless you're working for Google, Facebook, or Amazon. It has 103% growth rate there, but in the rest of the world, it's actually declining. You'll be working for like some newspaper going out of business. So I would say that along those lines, right, what people left behind was a market that was probably too focused on joint ventures and affiliates and things like that. But the market went too much in the other direction, in my opinion. I think that, you know, I wrote about this in the final chapter, the third manifesto, where I talked about why the direct response companies in the U.S. got so big versus all the other direct response companies all throughout the world. And the difference primarily was that the companies in the US were renting each other their lists, which meant that anytime a company got a new customer, the entire market grew, whether or not that company stayed in business because that person became a part of the market. Overseas, they didn't do that. And so the companies all stayed small. And, you know, I think that every business should have some preferred partners where they're doing affiliate deals and joint venture deals back and forth. If those partners are in complementary products and all the partners in that little group of people or whatever are people that are businesses that are out there acquiring through different channels, so that the effect is all those businesses improve. And I had a really interesting experience where like we had a funnel that was underperforming, and they asked me and one other person, Katie Vogel, like we need an extra dollar per person going through this to make this campaign work. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, let me look at the funnel and kind of figure out strategically where we need to change it, which would take me like a day. Whereas Katie was like, oh, well, we could just sell like, you know, a CPA deal, a co-reg type deal where, you know, with one of the businesses we do business with, and I'm sure they'd buy all the leads that they, you know, could get from this process for $1.50 or $2. And that'll then take our lead cost within line and we'll be able to keep the campaign alive. Like things like that should be done much more frequently, especially in an age where we're all like the platforms control so much. So I would say JV and affiliate type partnerships, there should be a focus on that to the extent that that's another channel and it's an important channel. And then I would say that probably the thing that is not, well, I'll say two more things, but one quick. One is that also you should be trying to get as much information about your prospects and customers. You should be moving them from platform to platform to platform. So, you know, sequential storytelling across numerous platforms and getting the ability to communicate with your prospects through these different platforms in addition to their snail mail address, in addition to their phone numbers for SMS messaging, but not using any of them to the point where you become an uninvited guest. And then the last thing I would say, and this is probably something I'm going to expand upon a lot during the live stream, but it's really, and I wrote about this in the Attention Age Doctrine too, and it's something that I think most people still don't fully get. And it's that you, in an age of social media, which, and I wrote this in 2008, and I was predicting the rise of social media, and I was talking about this. I was saying that in this new environment, prospects are no longer just your target. They are the best channel of communication, and you're the best medium. They're the best channel for you. And for me, when I think about that, I realize that I have 50 to 100 times more prospects than I do have customers. One of the reasons why my reports always went viral, or consistently went viral at least, is that I was giving my prospects social currency, information that made them more interesting and valuable. And I realized early on that if I could get prospects talking about me, that that would automatically work in any social media space or any platform, because the individual has been given a lot more of a voice. Who's been given less of a voice are businesses, small businesses, et cetera. So the same message said by you is less effective than the same message said by a prospect of yours, let alone 10 or 15 or 20 prospects. So the reason like why the manifesto has been downloaded millions of times is because prospects shared it. I didn't have a million customers, but I've had millions of prospects. And so understanding that prospects are a channel, not just a target, is a really important, I'd say, shift in thinking. Because if you do that, it then opens up, okay, well, what can I do to get my prospects to talk about me? And when you do that, you really start making social media work for you. And then the very last thing I would say is that online website owners, business owners, marketers, et cetera, need to start thinking about the difference between chasing demand and creating demand. And chasing demand is what most of us have done for the last bunch of years online, which is, you know, use these platforms to find prospects that have done things, taken certain actions, part of a group that make them highly likely to buy. And we've benefited by that with, you know, similar audiences and stuff like that. However, that's going to go away over time. And what I mean by that is that most of the media buyers I know tell me that, you know, that over the next 3 years, they assume that most of the platforms will have their AI tools all dialed up, that you really won't be able to media buy. And Facebook is going that route pretty quickly. So that's demand chasing. And what people really need to start thinking about is demand creating.
All right, everybody. I ended up having this crazy, crazy podcast experience with Rich. And so I broke this into two different podcasts. So what you heard is the first part. I wanted to make sure you tune into the next one. The next one is one of my favorite topics. As we kind of rambling through, we just got in this groove and ended up really talking about how to create true demand for your product in your customer's mind. So I want to make sure you listen to that one next. I think one of the funnest things for me when I have the opportunity of talking with some of my dear friends who've been in the industry a long time is you kind of get on these rants and all of a sudden something just clicks. And that's what happened. So I want to make sure you hear this next part. So tune in next time. Again, it's Rich Sheffern coming back, talking about some of the crazy things that are happening, really how to create massive demand for your product in your customer's mind, really tap it into that blue ocean. Again, he's going to be doing some amazing things on mid-February here. I think it's like the 19th of February. So I'm actually flying out there with Russell and Dean. You can find out more at CSIB2020.com. Again, C as in Charlie, S as in Sam, I as in India, B as in Bravo, 2020. So CSIB2020.com. Go take a look at it. Anyways, have an amazing day. Can't wait to have you guys take a look at and listen to this next episode. See ya.